Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, the 1% versus the 27%. The de Blasio administration has struck a deal with developers to build the Astoria Cove apartment complex on the waterfront in Queens, including a higher than average 27% affordable units.
There's no choice here. We're not buying density. You are now providing affordable housing because you're building housing.
Deputy Mayor Alicia Glenn laying down the law, but some analysts say the developers may ultimately back out of the deal because that's too much affordable housing to be profitable. We will try to find out if that's true on today's show and if we can set a 27% affordable precedent in New York City. Also today, we have former U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. He served under Bush with what he calls a compassionate conservative approach to immigration reform. Part of it is to give the undocumented a path to nationality as opposed to a path to citizenship. And yes, we will ask the former Bush AG if he still thinks foreigners in other countries are not covered by the Convention Against Torture. Plus, we will gaze into the future today, the future of fortune telling as a business. You know it's illegal in New York City, and some notable fraud cases are now being brought. But who thinks you're paying to have your future actually predicted? Apparently some people. And the Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year is unveiled for 2014. Clue, it's spelled V-A-P-E. But first, now dividing the Democratic Party, the Keystone XL pipeline, which would bring oil from the tar sands of Canada down through the United States to the Gulf of Mexico. Louisiana Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu, now in a re-election runoff, is among those Democrats now for it for a few different reasons.
Number one, this project has cleared every environmental hurdle and it has met the complete environmental review. Number two, it has the support of about 35 to 40 key organizations, from organized labor to organized business and to many groups in between. It will create jobs for America, not minimum wage jobs, but high-paying jobs for middle-class families. That's what we should be about here. And as a person who strongly believes, representing the people of my state, that it is time for America to become energy independent, and that is impossible without the Keystone Pipeline and other pipelines like it that move our energy from where it is produced to where it is consumed.
Mary Landrieu, who will probably have to vote on a Keystone bill in the Senate any day during her runoff campaign. But would President Obama sign it? He doesn't sound like it here.
Understand what this project is. It is providing the ability of Canada to pump their oil, send it through our land down to the Gulf, where it will be sold everywhere else. And it doesn't have an impact on U.S. gas prices.
Democrat versus Democrat. Is there a progressive case for the Keystone Pipeline? How true are the competing claims about jobs, the price of gasoline, and damage or not to the environment? Let's get two views from New York Times columnist Joe Nocera, who is for it. And opposed is Joe Rome, founding editor of Climate Progress, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Thanks to both of you, Joes, for coming on. Good morning.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Joe Nocera, is there a progressive case for the pipeline? Would you put it that way? Or
no, I definitely wouldn't put it that way. I mean, progressives, environmentally oriented progressives are probably against it. My case is to do with national security, with the price of oil, and also with the belief that this oil is already coming here anyway. And a pipeline would actually be safer than the way it comes here, which is by train, where there's a lot more spillage, and where, as we know, we've had some terrible accidents in the past. So it's not like you're. What the environmental movement wants to do is not just stop the Keystone Pipeline, but block the mining of tar sands oil in the first place. And that seems to me sort of a ludicrous possibility, because Canada is firmly committed to moving this oil.
Well, let's start on the tar sands oil. Joe Rome, why is this different from other kinds of oil for the uninitiated? And is that the ultimate goal of the environmental movement here, is to stop some kind of particularly environmentally rapacious oil mining?
Well, there's no question that the tar sands are much dirtier than regular oil. They're just what tarry sands. They're very energy intensive to extract and refine than regular crude oil. They also produce a high carbon byproduct called petroleum coke that adds even more pollution. Then, as it turns out, if you've seen pictures of the area, you have to cut down. They've been cutting down and burning their forests in order to develop this. And so when you look at it all, yes, this is precisely the kind of huge pool of dirty carbon that a rational and moral world would leave in the ground if it did not want to destroy the climate for the future. Now, if you ask what the environmentalist goal is, I'm a physicist myself by training and an energy person. The goal is to avoid catastrophic climate change. The scientists and governments of the world keep yelling louder and louder that we are headed towards a serious catastrophe. And the latest report that just came out last month said, we have to keep most of the fossil fuels that we already know about in the ground. We have to keep most of the conventional fossil fuels in the ground, your regular coal, oil, and gas, and all these unconventional stuff we can't exploit. And I think, based on the agreement that China just made with the United States, where China said it would peak carbon dioxide emissions in 2030, and the United States said it would continue reducing carbon pollution, that we have a very good chance at a global deal next year, and the world has a chance at avoiding catastrophe, mm-hmm. but only if it acts like an adult and says we can't burn every last drop of carbon-polluting fossil fuel.
So let me get your response to one other thing that Joe Nocera said in his initial answer, and then we'll go back to him. He said it's environmentally worse to move this oil, which Canada's going to produce anyway, through the United States by train down to the Gulf than it would be through this pipeline because of train accidents, et cetera. Do you disagree with that statement?
Well, I disagree with the premise of the statement. The notion that if you built the pipeline, you would all of a sudden stop shipping oil by train too. I don't understand that. The Canadians want to quadruple production of the tar sands oil. They want to fully exploit this, and there is the potential for a staggering amount of very dirty oil, carbon, and staggering amounts of carbon pollution to come out of Canada. So, if you could tell me, hey, we're going to pass a law that says you build this pipeline and we're not going to transport any more oil other than what comes out of this pipeline through any other means, that would be a different matter.
I
think it's pretty obvious.
Right.
You're going to do everything.
Let me just get the phone number out there. Some people are calling in, and that's fine. If anybody has a question about the Keystone XL pipeline, anybody ambivalent out there, undecided, I know we have some people with already formed strong opinions calling in, that's fine. How about anybody with a question about Keystone XL? If you're deciding whether to support or oppose this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Joe Rome from the Center for American Progress and New York Times columnist Joe Nocera. Joe Nocera, what about that last point that Joe Rome is making, that it isn't an either-or on the shipping? They're going to ship more if there's a pipeline because they're going to keep shipping the same amount by train anyway.
Well, and they're going to be shipping the fracked oil from North Dakota will be shipped as well. I mean, there'll be more. If you've read what's going on in the train industry right now, they're adding cars, they're doing everything they can to corner the market on shipping this oil. So, The other thing is, I just disagree with the notion that the Keystone Pipeline in and of itself is, as James Hansen put it once, game over for the environment. I think that's a ludicrous overstatement. And, you know, while we definitely should be weaning the society from fossil fuel, the fact of the matter is, you know, right now we're all completely dependent on fossil fuel, and fossil fuel in the Americas is actually pretty cheap because of fracking, and which is another thing most environmentalists are opposed, but it's been an astounding plus for our economy.
And I want to get into the economics of it and how many jobs this will create and see to what extent that's a disputed matter. That certainly seems to be the main thing that Senator Mary Landrieu is hanging her hat on this. But, Joe Nocera, the larger case that Joe Rome is just laying out is that maybe we don't need to develop things like tar sands oil, which are more carbon intensive than even the usual ways of getting oil out of the ground. If we have this U.S. treaty or agreement with China that the U.S. is going to stay on this track toward, I think it's about 25% carbon reduction in 15 years or so, and, or 10 years, and China is going to cap it by 2030, maybe that's the line on which we say, okay, we at least stop developing the extra polluting forms of oil in terms of carbon and start drawing the line here on things like this. Is that not a reasonable prospect to consider?
It is a reasonable prospect to consider. But, you know, our emission footprint has actually been going down in the U.S., and one of the reasons it's been going down is not because of oil or fracking, but because we have been pretty vigorous in closing down coal-fired power plants, which are dirtier than, I mean, to me, in the list of things that you want to deal with, switching coal-fired power plants to natural gas-based power plants is really important. Methane leakage or dealing with methane leakage by environmental regulation is really important. You know, the Keystone, the tar sands are we don't control whether or not the tar sands get built or not. Canada controls that, and so you can say, well, we're gonna block the pipeline to go down to the Gulf, but then you have to block the pipeline that potentially goes through British Columbia or the pipeline that goes through Nova Scotia.
And there are efforts to do that in Canada, I understand, right?
Yeah, there are, but the Canadian, I mean. Yes, there definitely are such efforts, especially the pipeline to the west,
right,
where the indigenous people, there are like 50 different tribes that have to be dealt with.
So maybe it's not out of the realm of political possibility that Canada will not be able to develop the maximum amount of tar sands oil from those areas, because if the U.S. blocks the pipeline and if these east and west moves in Canada succeed, which doesn't seem beyond the realm of possibility, maybe the environmental movement actually scores a big victory here potentially, and it's not inevitable that Canada develops it all.
I really disagree. I mean, I don't think that's right to say that Canada will not develop this to the full extent that they can. And you know, I could be wrong. I could definitely be wrong. But I've talked to Canadian officials and Canadian environmentalists, and the strong sense that I get is that this is happening.
Let's take a phone call, and we're going to start with Scott in Soho. Scott, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I don't think Obama, well, signing the treaty with China, everybody knows that's a joke. But the
well,
I think
that's another debate. Not everybody knows it's a joke, but go ahead. Sorry, Scott, go ahead.
I said I think that he's protecting Warren Buffett's train line business as opposed to doing something good for the environment. And I'm just curious if anybody knows anything about that, because I know he owns Warren Buffett bought a bunch of train lines, and he's making a ton of money.
Scott, you really think it's that narrow, doing a favor
absolutely.
His buddy who owns train lines?
Yeah, I mean, he told the American people it's better to pay higher taxes, so why not?
Either of you think this has anything to do with a favor for Warren Buffett, who owns trains?
I do not.
No. I think the thing to realize about the trains, of course, is that in a world where oil prices were going up, you could pay whatever you wanted to get the oil out. But the fact of the matter is oil prices have been dropping, and I think they've been dropping for various reasons. We're and other industrialized countries are cutting back on oil use. We have very strong fuel economy standards. Other countries do. China has just announced as part of its, you know, or in order to peak in 2030, it's going to have to cut back itself, slow oil consumption. So I don't think it is inevitable that oil prices are going to be so high that they actually justify the very expensive method of getting them out through trains, because it is not cheap to get stuff out through trains. That's, of course, why people want to build pipelines, because that makes it very simple. You just build the pipeline, and then you just the oil just flows, as opposed to trains, which, you know, as anyone can picture in their mind, is going to cost a lot of money to get large volumes of particularly sludgy oil out of Canada into the United States.
Michael and John O'Sara, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, the reason, I mean, let's not forget the reason, he's completely right, that if oil prices go low enough, then it becomes economically unviable to take the tar sands, because the tar sands process is extremely expensive. And maybe that's one way to stop the pipeline, is just to keep the price of oil low. But why is the price of oil low? It's largely low because the United States has become an oil-rich nation due to fracking, which is something environmentalists also hate. So, I mean, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it, too.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. Michael, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So just this plays exactly to what y'all were just discussing. It has to do with, if this is about economic viability of pulling it out of the ground, and the pipeline would increase the efficiency to the extent where it becomes profitable for the companies, where is the exchange? They think they're going to, like, produce a few thousand jobs, and that to be some kind of recompense for the rest of the global community, that they're going to start moving these oils down from through the United States?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And so let's get into the jobs issue here. Joan O'Sara, do we believe the projections of thousands of jobs? I've heard some skepticism about that. Have you looked into the best possible number, and are they permanent jobs or just building the pipeline? What do you know, and what do you think?
I don't know that much about it, but I am skeptical of the job claims. I think there'll be a lot of jobs in building the pipeline, but then not so many jobs running the pipeline. So I tend to discount the jobs aspect of the pipeline.
Really? The jobs aspect of the pipeline is so big. I think it's the biggest thing in the public's mind in general. I heard Chris Matthews say on Meet the Press the other day, this is why American public opinion is for the pipeline. Jobs, 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 even though people are concerned about the environment. Mary Landrieu is hanging it on jobs. You think that whole thing is a red herring?
I'm allowed to have a different opinion than them.
I know. Well, you're allowed to do analysis when they're just, you know, doing
politics.
Right.
And so, you know, I haven't looked into it in a while, but every time I've looked into it, I've come away with the belief that, you know, the jobs are sort of like building a high-rise building. You know, lots of people are employed to build it, and then not so many to maintain it.
Joe Rome, have you looked at the jobs numbers at the Center for American Progress?
Sure. Well, you know, the State Department said that there would be 50 permanent jobs. The
50 what?
50? 50.
Really? That's it?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it is a pipeline. I think everyone can visualize, once you build a massive pipeline, it just sits there for decades. I mean, you have to have people paying attention, you know, to monitors and stuff, and you have to have people occasionally go and repair it. But unless you're going to station people every mile to see if it's leaking and have them just stand there, this is a static project afterwards. It's not like you're building a manufacturing plant. So, no, you know, there is a temporary creation of jobs when you are going to build, a massive pipeline. On the other hand, if what you want is a temporary creation of jobs, then let's just have an economic stimulus package that builds things that are useful for society as a whole, like, you know, new sewage systems, that sort of thing. But an oil pipeline whose primary benefit is to allow Canada to exploit this dirty, polluting carbon resource and get rich off of it while the rest of the world has to deal with the pollution. I mean, I just want to be clear here. The key issue is global warming. Because of the U.S.-China deal, we know that come December 2015 in Paris, the nations of the world are likely to negotiate a climate agreement. The United States has put on the table what many people think is a reasonable start towards its fair share. In response, China has done so. Europe has announced it will do a 40% cut in carbon pollution by 2030. Everyone should expect Canada will also do its part. But if Canada exploits the tar sands, then it will become essentially a rogue nation. It will never be able to be part of a global climate treaty. And it doesn't make any sense for the United States to enable Canada to be this rogue nation that can't ever be part of a climate treaty.
That's interesting, and we should get a Canadian on to maybe defend against that accusation. But when you say Canada couldn't ever be part of a climate treaty, couldn't they be developing the tar sands but still be part of a treaty that commits them to reduce their carbon footprint in other ways?
The problem is that the amount of exploitation that they want to do of the tar sands will generate so much growth in emissions that it would dwarf any of their other efforts. I mean, you know, until they found the tar sands, most people thought of Canada as actually a very environmentally responsible nation, and they were part of this Kyoto effort to reduce emissions. And it's only with this discovery of the tar sands that they pulled out of the global climate regime and now are saying, hey, we just can't be part of that. And I, you know, look, Canada is entitled to do whatever it wants, but to the extent that those of us and the world decide we're trying to avoid catastrophic global warming, if Canada says, hey, we're not going to be part of that, I don't understand why the United States should be enabling that. Our job is to help it easier for the nations of the world to come together to stop catastrophic global warming, not make it easier for the nations of the world to never come to agreement.
We're almost out of time for this debate on the Keystone XL pipeline between Joe Rome, who's just speaking from the Center for American Progress, and New York Times columnist Joe Nocera. I want to replay the Obama clip that I played from the beginning and get both of you as one final thought on one of the claims that the president makes here in being skeptical about Keystone. Listen.
Understand what this project is. It is providing the ability of Canada to pump their oil, send it through our land down to the Gulf, where it will be sold everywhere else. And it doesn't have an impact on U.S. gas prices.
Joe Nocera, do you agree with the last part of the president's statement here? This doesn't have an impact on U.S. gas prices? Because some people say, oh, look, you know, more oil coming into the United States, supply and demand, it's going to push the price down at the pump.
Which it absolutely will. Also, you know, the idea that every drop is going to be sold overseas is somewhat bogus. I mean, it's going to come through Gulf refineries because that's where America has its refineries, and then it will be sold internally, externally, wherever. In terms of energy security, you know, knowing that it's coming through quote unquote our land, you know. You know, basically means it's there if we need it.
Joe Rome?
Well, I think Joe Nocera knows that the price of oil is set on a global market, and it is true that we have dramatically reduced our dependence on imported oil, in part because of increased domestic production, in part because of stronger and stronger fuel economy standards and fewer younger Americans buying and driving cars. But I think, you know, the key point is, yes, we don't know exactly where all that oil is going to go, but Canada doesn't have to sell a drop of the United States if they don't want. People need to understand this is a pipeline that we are doing largely for the benefit of Canada to allow Canadian oil to Gulf refineries where it can go anywhere. And I think the point is that there's no significant benefit economically to the United States over the long term, except this tiny number of jobs. But the cost, the cost potentially is the United States conceding that, that we're not going to avoid catastrophic warming, and hey, we're going to make it easy for Canada to be a big a bad actor
in this
whole climate.
Joan Rosero, on your answer, if the price of oil is set globally, why does it matter to the price of oil at the pump in the United States if this oil is refined in the Gulf or if it's refined in the Pacific off British Columbia?
It doesn't. It absolutely doesn't matter. You know, you add more oil to the global supply, and that pushes prices down, which is exactly what's been happening.
But isn't that what the president said? Whether or not it comes through the United States on Keystone doesn't have an impact on prices in the United States for gasoline.
Well, with the I don't think the price – my reading of what the president said didn't really refer to prices. It referred to whether or not the oil was going to be sold in the United States.
I see. All right. Well, we will leave it there. Joan Rosero, New York Times columnist, and Joe Rahm, who is the founding editor of Climate Progress and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Looks like the Senate probably will vote on Keystone one way or another in the coming days. And listeners, now you've gotten two views, and hopefully you're better informed. Thank you both very much for joining us for this.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the 1% versus the 27%. The de Blasio administration has struck a deal with developers to build the Astoria Cove apartment complex on the waterfront in Queens, including a higher than average 27% affordable units. But some analysts may say the developers may actually back out because that's too much affordable housing to be profitable. We'll try to find out if that's true and whether this can set a precedent for affordable housing in the city. Stay with us.